This presentation has been previously broadcast.
The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
My granddaughter lost her first baby, and just 2 days ago, I was told they were having another baby, and I know it's because of the Divine Mercy Chaplet.
Oh, what a beautiful story.
So I want to thank you and Relevant Radio and for blessing my priest for curing his cancer. Oh. Just so many. Yeah. Thank you so much.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Love that prayer. We'll pray it in an hour. Good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani. Thanks for joining me. It's always good to hang out with you. And tell others about the chaplet that's coming up. In fact, coming up in just a few minutes, a little later in this hour, I want to share with you a story of a Divine Mercy miracle that took place at what I like to call the Hour of Power. And you probably know the story of Sully Sullenberg, the miracle in the Hudson and that down plane. You may not know that Divine Mercy played a role in that miraculous, well, the miraculous survival of that airplane. I'll fill you in on that story. It's a great one. In fact, in the days ahead, I want to continue to get you plugged into Divine Mercy. I'm going to be sharing all sorts of things with you that you might not have heard before. I mean, many of these things I put in my book, and if you've not yet signed up for it, let me give a quick plug for that. Please go ahead and do it. It's absolutely free. Okay, it's free. Not asking for any money whatsoever. In fact, Relevant Radio has actually agreed to pay for your shipping and your handling. That's how passionately and how important we think this book is. That's how passionately they are about getting the message of mercy out. This might be the first time you're hearing about it. I've been working on a book for a while. I've had decades of experience with Divine Mercy, and I finally put so many of the people that I have met, so many of the encounters that I had, so much of the knowledge I've been able to acquire into one easy-to-read book. And it really is easy to read. I was kind of limited by the pages. I was only allowed to keep the book to about 140 pages. Believe me, I could have written 240 pages, 440 pages. Patrick, my board operator today, is saying volume two next time. No, I got another idea for a book. I got a great one. Oh, you're going to love this one too. But right now, you know, we are planning to give X amount of copies away, then that'll probably be it. If you'd like to get one, here's how you do it. It's very, very simple, okay? Be first to do it. You know, we've just made this available, but I know the response has just been overwhelming, and I'm very grateful for you because it shows me how much you love God's mercy and how you want to share it with others. That's the key. You got to get it into the hands of other people. You got to, when you learn about this, when you read about this, say, hey, you got to read this book and to pass it on, okay? It's relevantradio.com. If you go to the main webpage, you're going to see a beautiful image of the book. The cover is spectacular. It actually has an anointing on it. I really believe that because that's the image that St. Faustina had asked, that the Lord asked St. Faustina to have painted. So if you want to see what the Lord, you know, had requested, and Faustina was frustrated. The image was nowhere near what she thought was reflective of the Lord. But in the book, I tell a story about how years later, that image was closer to the way Christ looked than anything else. And we'll tell you about that coming up maybe in the days ahead. But relevantradio.com or your mobile app, go now. Sign up while you can, okay? Relevantradio.com. Do not call the studio and do not call the office here because we can't ship it out that way. You just got to go online. And if you can't do that, I know some people say, I don't have an email account. Just, you know, get your niece or your nephew, your grandkid, your son, your daughter, your neighbor, somebody to help you, okay? And tell your priest to put it in the parish bulletin. Somebody said that to me today, too. They said, why don't you make the announcement? Have the parish priest for Divine Mercy Sunday put this announcement in the bulletin, say, free Divine Mercy book, you know, and simply go to relevantradio.com. What a blessing to the parish. What a blessing to you for spreading that message of mercy. And I'll tell you what, you'll get access to the book. But coming up, I'll share with you the story of Fred Beretta. Great story. Guy I know who's on my radio program back, well, probably about 5 years ago now. And this is after that Flight 1549 went down in the Hudson in January, that cold day. I remember that vividly. But we'll talk about that coming up. First of all, good to have you back. Thanks for joining me. And we're going to get into a lot of topics today. The Holy Father actually came out, and he was talking a little bit about whether or not gay marriages can be blessed. The German bishops had thought that that might be a possibility. So I'll fill you in on that right after the chaplet. We'll share that news with you. But let's talk money first. All right. I know it's tough out there for a lot of people. You might be in a difficult situation. Your so-called stimulus check, it's coming, right? It's coming. The bill passed last week by Democrats in Congress have already started to arrive in people's bank accounts. My board operator saying he hasn't gotten his yet. If you filed a 2019 or a 2020 tax return and you had the IRS send you a refund, if you did direct deposit, you might already have seen it. Some people got it this weekend. $1,400, by the way. That's the number for you. 1,400 beans coming your way. That helps, right? There's going to be some people who are probably saying, hey, I didn't get mine yet. Well, maybe it's pending deposit. Maybe it's going to come next week. If it's for you and your spouse, double the number, $2,800 for you. And if you have any dependents that are who are over the age of 17, now listen to this. This was something I just discovered. If you've got dependents who are over the age of 17, there's going to be $1,400 for each one of them as well. That's some good college money, right? That's not bad. And the checks are going to about 90% of American households. So for singles earning $75,000 and $80,000 a year, you're going to lose a certain amount of the payments. The cutoff is at $80,000. But as the head of the household, earning between $112,500 and $120,000, couples filing jointly, filing jointly, making between $150 and $160. So you're going to see some disparities in terms of the amount of money that comes. But let me share this with you. The $1.9 trillion stimulus bill was passed last week, as you know. And I saw a report in ABC News I thought I'd share with you. Listen to this.
Tonight, Americans starting to see financial help from Washington. Some of those direct $1,400 payments laid out in President Biden's COVID relief package already landing in bank accounts.
That just is so much stress off my shoulders.
Sue Goslin from LA County struggles to get by on Social Security. She said she logged into her account last night and saw the deposit. The money will go to basics like rent and groceries.
It is so wonderful to get this money, to be able to pay it to my landlord, to be able to stock up my shelves.
The White House aware millions of Americans, often the poorest and most vulnerable, struggled to get their stimulus payments last time. The IRS promising to do better, working to send more payments straight to bank accounts, and Monday launching an online tool for Americans to track their payments. President Biden saying now his team needs to deliver.
We have to get this right. Details matter.
All right, that is the president for you. We'll see what happens. So, you know, think about it too. And just as from a spiritual perspective, I also believe in giving back. You know, when God gives to you, maybe you know somebody who's in a really difficult situation. Maybe you can help them out of that situation a little bit. You know, Peter Grandage, who's a regular contributor on this radio program, joins me, I think, the first and third week of the month. He really believes in tithing. I mean, he says, you know, there's one place in Scripture that Christ tells us to put him to the test. The Lord tells us to put him to the test. And that's in Malachi, the book of Malachi. And you can't outgive God. I cannot tell you that enough. Of course, Relevant Radio can always use your support, but I know you've got other causes. There's pro-life causes. There's people in your family. There's people that you know. As you get blessed, as this comes in, if you say, hey, well, this is a real bonus for me, then maybe help somebody else out. Just food for thought. All right? I'll put that little pearl on the table for you. Hey, you know, one of the things I've been covering a lot is not only the currents that are flowing through the culture right now. There's been tremendous cultural change, right? We're getting rid of we're in a cancel culture, you know, where we live in a dictatorship of relativism. You and I have been talking about this for months. But another thing I've been talking about is how Satan is becoming more aggressive, how he used to love to hide in the shadows, right? He'd never be visible. It's one of his greatest victories, you know, to make people think he doesn't exist. I think he's becoming more visible than ever today. That's my personal take. And I've been reporting on the vandalism that we're seeing on churches around the country and around the world. Now, there was an outburst of this in Rwanda, Africa, before the genocide erupted. And I've noticed the parallel in other places of the world where this happened. Well, reports again continue here in our own country. Vandalism, this time in Boston. Two churches, one in South Boston, the other in Dorchester. This report comes from CBS Boston.
News tonight in Boston, two churches have been vandalized, and Boston police are asking for help to try to find the vandals. Early this morning, police were called to the St. Teresa of Calcutta Church on Columbia Road in Dorchester. Someone put an unknown substance on the church's lock, so the doors wouldn't even open with the key. The same kind of lock tampering happened at St. John Paul Catholic Academy nearby. And 90 minutes later, someone knocked over a statue of the Blessed Mother at the St. Monica St. Augustine Church in South Boston. Officers found the same unknown substance on all the locks.
Huh. It's terrible. It is really what it is. So locks filled with some kind of substance to prevent them from being able to put a key in, statues being toppled. This continues, you know, one of those churches at St. Teresa in Calcutta, it's the sixth time it's been vandalized since July of last year. I don't know if you're aware about it. Six times. You know what? I'd invest in some outdoor cameras now. All right? You got to do something. Police are looking for a male suspect who's caught on the video. And again, you know, there could be mental illness. There could be all sorts of other things. You know, in Massachusetts, too, as you know, there is a very high witch population there in Salem. And I'm sure that has spread throughout the area. I was actually having breakfast one morning. I was out for the funeral of Father Seraphim Michalenko, who was the vice postulator for the canonization of St. Faustina. And I'm in a restaurant that night, a couple priests and a friend. And waitress, you know, reaches over, extends her arm to put down the food in front of us. And I see a tattoo. I think it's at 1692 on it. It was some date and some other insignia there. And I said, that's interesting. 1692, what's that signify? And she kind of looks at me and she says, and Patrick, look this up because I don't know when the Salem witch trials were. She said Salem witch trials. I'm trying to remember the date. But I think it was 1692 on her hand. She goes, it's reflective of the Salem witch trials. And my friend turned to her and says, oh, you don't look. She says, it is 1692. Thanks, guys. She says, he said to her, he goes, you don't look like a witch. And she says, that's the point. So it's like, now we're in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. I'm pretty far from Salem at the time, but this is the type of stuff that we see infiltrating. So look, not to bring you down or to scare you. On a totally, different note, Pope Francis has declared the shrine at Knock, Ireland as an international Marian Eucharistic shrine. So some good news here, right? The shrine was a site of a very unique apparition. I could tell you more about it another time. Our Lady appeared here. It was one of those appearances where she appeared silently. You know, a number of saints appeared with her. Saint Joseph actually was part of this apparition in this great year of dedicated to him. He appeared during this apparition. The townspeople saw her there, and Pope Francis has come out and you know, during this great year dedicated to Saint Joseph, has elevated this shrine. Listen to this report from Shalom World.
Pope Francis is to formally declare the sanctuary of Our Lady of Knock in Ireland as an international Marian and Eucharistic shrine. That will also take place on March the 19th, the Feast of St. Joseph. It was back in August 1879 that 15 local people from the village of Knock in County Mayo claimed to witness an apparition of the Blessed Virgin Mary, St. Joseph, St. John the Evangelist, angels, and Jesus Christ depicted as the Lamb of God. Soon after, those claims were approved as trustworthy by a church-sponsored commission. Since then, the location of the apparition has become a significant place of pilgrimage for Catholics and many others. Pilgrims have included Pope St. John Paul II, Mother Teresa of Calcutta, and Pope Francis himself. Now, on March the 19th, Archbishop Michael Neary of Tuam will concelebrate Holy Mass at Knock, along with the shrine's rector, Father Richard Gibbons. It is then that the new papal proclamation will be officially declared. Ave Maria.
All right, there you have it. More to come. We need to pray, though, and in a powerful way for our neighbors to the north in Canada. I've been following for quite a while what has been unfolding there when it comes to assisted suicide or euthanasia. And you know, wherever that has been introduced, it usually hasn't taken very long for either practice to be extended beyond the initial parameters that were placed around it. Normally, it's viewed as, you know, mercy. It's viewed as, you know, giving somebody a choice or putting them out of their misery or however they wanted to paint it, right? But it never ends there. And that, first of all, that's wrong, period, right? But even to that point, it's a slippery slope. So when the initial law say that a person has to be mentally competent, it's normally one of the things they say in order to euthanize them, they have to be at least an adult, 18 years of age. They have to be diagnosed with a condition that leaves him or her with 6 months or less of life expectancy. And they can't be suffering from depression or any other mental illness, right? They ask for pills at least, you know, twice on separate occasions and have two different doctors sign off on the request. Okay, it seems like, okay, that's a pretty significant protocol, right? That's how it starts. That's how this thing begins. Then what happens? Then the legislators, they weasel in, they creep in, they begin to whittle away at those so-called protections. So, for instance, we now have the Netherlands. The Netherlands, and God have mercy on them, is allowing for assisted suicide from kids who are just 12 years old. Can you imagine that? A 12-year-old? That's criminal. Absolutely criminal. Our neighbors to the north, Canada, just passed a bill. It's called number C-7, and it allows for euthanasia. Not assisted suicide, but euthanasia of people who are dealing with, now listen to this, mental illness. So, for instance, if you've been diagnosed with clinical depression, you've been dealing with any other physical ailment like cancer or Parkinson's, well, you can now be euthanized. You can be put to death simply because you are dealing with depression. And I'm not sure what the difference is between putting a gun to your head, but certainly this is probably a much cleaner way, you know? It's a lot tidier, unfortunately. And I don't mean to diminish that. This is just bizarre that we are, you know, I sit back and I look at the news and I give you a perspective on all that's unfolding, both here in this country and around the world, both in terms of cultural waves and the infiltration of the culture of death and so many others. It's just an amazing time in which we are living in. You wonder how much more demented can you get? Dr. Catherine Ferrier joins me today. She's a geriatric physician in Montreal who's been serving older populations for many years, including many people with dementia. You may have a loved one in your family who has that. She's also the president of the Physicians Alliance Against Euthanasia, and I am delighted to have her with us today. Doctor, thank you for your work. Good afternoon.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be talking with you today.
This bill, I'm just flabbergasted. It allows for euthanasia, not just assisted suicide. Can you explain the difference between the two? There are some people who sometimes use those words interchangeably, but I see them a little bit different.
They're completely different. So euthanasia means that the doctor, or actually some nurses, inject the patient with a lethal substance, which causes their death. So it's a direct act by another person on the body of the person, and they die. Assisted suicide, as is legal in some states in the U.S., as you know, so the doctor prescribes a lethal overdose of pills, which the patient can get at a pharmacy, and then they can bring them home and may or may not end up taking them. But it's the patient who commits suicide with the means provided by the doctor. Yeah. So it's actually quite different, also because not everybody, every assisted suicide ends up in a suicide. People might get the prescription and never take it. But both are major problems.
So, Dr. Ferrier, I'm curious what the parameters for allowing this to happen are. Is there a severity level to the mental issue, mental illness issue that has to be met now in Canada? I mean, does it have ongoing? I mean, who determines that? Who says, okay, let's put this person to death?
Well, that's part of the problem. So actually, the way this law came about, it did not have to do initially with mental illness. That just got kind of added on a few weeks ago. There was a court case saying that it was unconstitutional to require that people be dying before they get euthanasia.
Right.
And it was a court case by two disabled people who said, you know, we can't get it. Other dying people can get it. We can't get it. It's not fair. And they won their court case. But that was at the first level court in Quebec. And normally any case that disallows a federal law would be appealed by the government. But the government, in its wisdom, did not appeal it. So that court case basically becomes law if no law is passed. So the major part of this bill has to do with removing the requirement that people be dying. And so it has to do with disability. It has to do with chronic illness. It has to do with any suffering related to illness of any kind.
Wow.
Without any reference to whether you're close to the end of life or not.
Wow.
And so that's already very, very bad, as you can tell. And then what happened is that, so in the initial bill, it said, you know, for the purposes of this bill, mental illness is not considered an illness. And so then people who want everyone to be treated the same said, well, you know, they suffer a lot too. And there was a certain lobby in favor of including mental illness. And they said, well, you know, if you don't include it now, you'll get taken to court again, which is right. a kind of a funny way of deciding what's good for people.
Yeah, right.
And so the Senate, the way the government works in Canada is that we have the House of Commons, which is the elected body, and we have the Senate, which is appointed.
Right.
And the Senate normally is supposed to just ratify laws and, you know, kind of fix them up a little bit. And they actually added the mental illness provision. They removed the exclusion
wow.
of mental illness. And then it went back to the House of Commons, and they said, sure, fine, yeah, we agree with the Senate. So that just happened last week.
Wow.
The bill still has to go back to the Senate, but since that was their idea, we don't expect them to,
yeah, right.
to do anything about it. So the proponents are saying, you know, we can tell the difference between somebody who's suicidal because of their depression and someone who wants to die because they have a grievous illness.
Uh-huh.
And those people should be allowed to die. But most experts in psychiatry say, you know, someone with a mental illness who wants to die, pretty well by definition, that's a symptom of their illness. And if you treat them and take care of them and give them the right medications
yeah.
and deal with the social problems in their life, the vast majority will get better. And they will lose their suicidality. And they will
yeah.
be grateful that you prevented them from committing suicide.
Yeah.
And that's really the basis of a lot of psychiatry and of all, like, suicide prevention hotlines and all of those, right? They try to talk you down.
Yeah, you're right. So, well, doctor, I'll tell you, hang on one second. I'm going to take a short pause here. But when we come back, let's talk more. If you want to join us, feel free to dial in right now. We'll take your calls, your questions, your comments. The number for you all day, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Taking a look at Canada and a major move towards euthanasia. Stay with me.
We're back on our feet again, and now everyone is praying together. Hi, this is Father Rocky with our 23rd Lenten lesson on the Mass. The gifts having been prepared, the priest invites everyone to pray. Pray, brethren, that my sacrifice and yours may be acceptable to God, the Almighty Father. Standing up, the people reply, may the Lord accept the sacrifice at your hands for the praise and glory of his name, for our good and the good of all his holy church. My sacrifice and yours. Just what does that mean? Many things, but especially that the Mass is a sacrifice, not just a meal, and it is the re-presentation of Christ's sacrifice on the cross, but in an unbloody manner. Everyone who participates in the Mass is asked to make a sacrifice because making a sacrifice is a proof of love. And our religion demands that we love God.
Mass with Father Rocky, noon central.
And join us for Class After Mass. Hi, I'm Cale Clark. It's The Faith Explained, 12:30 central every day on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
All the news and issues
now
that are happening now.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. It's good to be here with you today. If you are just getting plugged in, sharing with you some news that's now unfolding with our neighbors to the north. During the break, I was speaking with Dr. Catherine Ferrier. She's a geriatric physician in Montreal, and she has, you know, part of her ministry serving the older population. She's done it for years, including people with dementia. And as I was sharing with you, Canada has just passed a bill that will allow for euthanasia, and not just assisted suicide. We try to define those two terms. It'll allow for the euthanizing of people dealing with mental illness. Mental illness. If you've been diagnosed, as I said, with clinical depression, you're not dealing with any other physical ailments. You don't have cancer or any other degenerative type of disease, right? You can now be euthanized. You can be put to death. I mean, that's the reality of this. And I was talking to the doctor about this, and I'll bring her back on with me in a second here. But, you know, I said, you know, so often people think it's out of sight, out of mind. You know, that's the Netherlands. That's Canada. She goes, well, we're your neighbors to the north. I mean, we're right next door. And I said, you know, you're so right. You know, we in the States here, so often we see liberal doctrine or this type of ideology, you know, show up in these liberal states on the West Coast, like, say, California. It eventually ripples across the country. We are foolish. We do ourselves a disservice if for some reason, you think, oh, that's not going to have any impact on me, because it will. I mean, this stuff is going to come home to roost. I think we should learn from what's unfolding in these other nations. And you can see how the envelope, the border, continues to get pushed. Hey, doctor, it's good to have you back. I want to pick up on that point. For those who are sitting out there saying, oh, that's Canada, or that's the Netherlands, or that's some other place that's not here, that would never happen here. That, to me, is a delusion, because I do think that we have a lot to learn. This is really perhaps a lesson for our own country. How would you view that?
You know, when they started talking about this in Canada 10-plus years ago, I was totally shocked, because I'd thought about it a lot over the years as a theoretical question.
Yep.
But all of a sudden it popped up as everything was in place. You know, all of the key institutions had been infiltrated by pro-euthanasia people, and it was like too late really to push back. And that's what happened. Now, I live in Quebec. Quebec is like the French province in Canada, right? And Quebec is very proud of being very avant-garde and kind of at the front of all the new waves. And some people say, well, you know, it's not for nothing that euthanasia started in Quebec, because it did before the rest of Canada. It was like the international euthanasia movement's toehold in North America to spread it to the rest of North America. Wow. And I don't know if that's true, but it certainly makes sense to me.
Well, why is it that it seems these laws always seem to loosen up as time goes on?
If you accept the principle, right? Yeah. If you accept the principle that killing somebody to relieve their suffering is a good solution, then like, how come the guy in the next room gets it and I don't get it? If an adult can get it, why can't a child get it? If that's a competent adult can get it, why can't somebody with dementia get it? As soon as you accept that it's a good thing, then like everybody should be allowed to get it, but it's not a good thing. That's the problem.
That's so true. So are Canadians getting tired of this, or has this just become, you know, totally accepted? They see it as a good thing. Are they speaking out? The sentiment there, and what can I do? I mean, I know I'm going to pray for Canada, but, you know,
I appreciate that.
What can be done, and where are you right now in terms of the fight?
Well, this law will probably be approved by the Senate before the end of March, and then it will come into effect. The mental illness thing, they've given it 2 years to study it. But I don't think it's to study whether it's a good idea or not. It's to study how to put it into practice, logistically speaking. So I don't expect it to change, but you never know. I mean, there's always, there's sometimes good surprises, a lot of bad surprises. But what's happening right now is that the news, I'm sure the same there as here, is dominated by COVID.
Yeah.
And most people don't even know that this debate is going on. Even a lot of doctors don't even know that this debate is going on. And so, there's a pushback. Actually, this is the best pushback we've had, because a lot of groups like disability groups, indigenous groups, psychiatrists, a lot of people have gone and testified to parliament and so on and so forth. But you almost feel like they were, they were talking to a brick wall. Nobody listened.
Right.
Especially the disabled people. They're desperate, because this is really targeted at them, plus the mental illness. But because what happens with, you know, a disabled person, people look at them and say, oh, yuck, I wouldn't want to look like that.
Right.
But that's the only life they have.
That's right.
And they'd rather be alive than dead.
My wife has an aunt who often says that every year she gets older. She's now 90 years old or 91 years old.
Yeah.
Somebody says, oh my gosh, would you want to live to be 95? She goes, ask me when I'm 94, right? I mean, with disability, exactly. I mean, just because they have a disability doesn't mean they want to end their life. So
in fact, when you objectively study quality of life, for example, of very old people or people with dementia, they always estimate it better than the people around them do.
Yeah. That's
so,
true.
Your 95-year-old aunt says, oh, my life is pretty good, all things considered. And, the grandchildren or the great-grandchildren say, I would never want to be like that.
That's so true. Hey, doctor, thank you. I enjoyed our conversation today. We're going to continue to follow and monitor this. I said, I pray a prayer on the air at 3 o'clock every afternoon Central Time here. So I will be I'll be praying for your efforts there. I know you'll be blessed in it. And just keep up the good fight. Thank you for making time for us and putting this on our radar.
It's a pleasure. Have a good day.
God bless you. It's Dr. Catherine Ferrier, and she's also the president of Physicians Alliance Against Euthanasia. And check it out. Please do pray and be aware of what's coming. Like, I know it's so easy to say this is out of sight and it's out of mind, but I just want to tell you, that's not always the case. I warned what happened. Look, we knew what happened when contraception in 1939 became accepted by the Episcopal Church, right? We knew what happened when Roe v. Wade eventually became the law of the land. We knew it happened when marriage got redefined. You could forecast what's going to happen from these bad decisions, from these bad seeds that are planted. You're going to get bad fruit. And don't think that this is not going to come our way. I mean, you can see the logic. I thought she pointed it out pretty well, how the needle moves. And here's the thing. You know, when it comes to suffering, that's one of the great mysteries of life. You know, maybe somebody is suffering. Maybe they have a debilitating disease. Maybe there's some challenging disability. I mean, maybe you are battling depression. Maybe you are battling some sort of difficulty. Suffering is a mystery. It is an absolute and total mystery. You know, I got to be honest with you. I scratch my own head sometimes with it. And I've got a brother-in-law who I often quote here. And when he converts, I'm going to lose half of him as good material here. But you know, he's this guy with an atheistic perspective. And he always says to me, you know, how could a good and loving God permit this? Why would he allow suffering, you know? It is one of those great mysteries. It is. It's difficult. God loves us so much, he gave us free will, right, to love him freely, you know, to embrace him or to reject him. The Lord's not going to take our will away from us. The Lord told St. Faustina, in fact, you know, and I talk about this all of the time. You know, what did Jesus say? We're going to pray the chaplet coming up in just a moment. He says, if only the suffering soul, if you are suffering right now, if you knew how much you were loved by God, you would die of joy. You would die of excessive happiness. And Faustina said, and all the great saints know this. You look at Padre Pio, you look at St. Bernadette of Subaru, you take a look at any saint who suffered, right? St. Teresa of Lisieux, she had tuberculosis. Faustina succumbed to it. You take a look at what the martyrs went through, the sufferings. Faustina said, someday you will know the value of your suffering. But then you'll no longer be able to suffer. This is your moment. This is your moment. If you are suffering now, this is your moment. Someday you will know the value of your suffering, but then you will no longer be able to suffer. In fact, St. Faustina had it. I really should have done a chapter on suffering in this book. It would have been a great chapter. So much to talk about. Volume 2, Patrick says again. I like that, Patrick. You're right. Faustina, one time, she was given these visions of heaven and hell. In purgatory, right? She saw the tortures, the chambers of hell. In fact, I write about that in the book, and if there are many of them. She highlights, she writes about seven different tortures that await the damned, right? But there's many, many more, and so often you suffer according to the way that you offended God or that you sinned. She saw heaven as well. She had these experiences with the afterlife. And when she had this Trinitarian experience, when she glimpsed what awaits us, our true home, that true reality, right? The joy, the ecstasy, the love, the exchange that we're going to have in the next life. She said that she would be willing to suffer all of the agonies, the tortures of all the martyrs. Think about these people who were flayed alive, who were impaled, who were set on fire by Nero and lit like torches to light up the evening, the night sky. Think about the people fed to lions or put on the rack or eviscerated and disemboweled. Think about the tortures that people went through for their faith. She said she would be willing to suffer all of them combined if it meant just moving one degree closer to God in heaven. And Faustina suffered, and she suffered willingly. So when we see this culture of death that is so evident today, when we see this movement, and Satan is so clever, isn't he? You have to admit this, right? He's just so brilliant. He's a fallen angel. He's an angelic mind. He makes it look like it's a good. He makes it look great. Oh, yeah. Oh, no, it's mercy. Kill that person with that disability. You wouldn't want to live like that. They've got depression. You're doing them a favor. Terminate them. You don't want that baby in the womb, do you? That's going to ruin your life. Terminate it. I mean, and I can give you scenario after scenario. You get it. It's the lie of the evil one. The great deceptor. That's what it's all about. And yet we live in a culture today where we are so egocentric, so pleasure-oriented, that we avoid suffering at all costs. Faustina went on to say, she said, if the angels were capable of envy, they would envy us for just two things. The angels, they can move at the speed of thought, right, that have the encounter with the beatific vision. They have all these, you know, if angels were capable of envy, they would envy us for two things. And one, of course, you know what it is, right? It's receiving the Lord in the Blessed Sacrament. If you're not going to Mass on Sunday, shame on you. You're foolish. If you're not, I try to go daily. You know, what a blessing. And I see so many people today not going back. I see so many people leaving the church. I'm thinking, how blind. You swallowed the poison pill. You know, you've bought into the great cultural lie. You know, the Catholic Church is more than an institution. It's not a building. You know, it is what Jesus Christ established, the fruit of his mission. So, one, if angels were capable of envy, they would envy us for two things. The first, our ability to receive Holy Communion. You know what the second one is? Suffering. It is suffering. It's a great mystery. It is. It's a great mystery. And only when you stand before God will you understand. I mean, look at Padre Pio. You know, look at the great saints. Look at the things that they were so willing to embrace. And you got to be careful. You know, recently I had been praying, and a friend of mine gave me this really, he called me out of the blue, and he gave me this pep talk. And it wasn't intended to be a pep talk. We were talking about something else, but he inspired me to begin fasting again. He inspired me to begin to offer up greater sacrifice and penance. And I want to do the same thing for you because there's a power in it. You know, I'm trying to fast with greater intensity. You also got to be careful about asking the Lord to give you suffering because he'll give it. Because I told the Lord, Lord, whatever sufferings you want to give me, I will embrace. Like St. Faustina, like others, I'll be willing to do that. Because the Lord, Our Lady came to the Fatima Seers and says that nobody is offering their penance or their sacrifice for the conversion of sinners. And because of that, those souls are going to hell. They're going to hell. You might have a child living in a very sinful lifestyle. Why not fast? Why not offer your suffering, your sacrifice? Don't waste it. Offer it for that particular soul. The Fatima Seers wouldn't drink, wouldn't eat. They wore harsh ropes. They did all sorts of penances after this encounter. You know, they did all sorts of really difficult penance. So suffering is not a curse. It's not a reason to be euthanized. In some respects, it is a secret weapon, and it will amplify the power of your prayer. When united to that of the Lord on the cross, even if you don't feel it in your heart, it's an act of the will, I'm telling you, it will be absolutely transforming, all right? Absolutely transforming. I take a quick break, and when I come back, I'd love to talk with you a little bit more. I want to remind you, and maybe I'll talk about this when we return. I have a book that's out on Divine Mercy, and if you're intrigued by the life of St. Faustina, you want to know about her suffering, there's some things I put in the book about what she did in terms of suffering that you might not have heard before. There's lots of little tidbits of information that I've been able to assimilate over the years. I really believe God has called me to spread mercy. I didn't realize it at the time, but I really believe he called me to this great mission. I produced a documentary on it, and years later, here I am writing a book on it. I mean, there's a lot of books out there, but this, I said to my wife, and I didn't say this in a vain way. I said, you know, what I love about it is my approach to this book, radically different than any other book that's out there. It's not just quotes. It's not just, it's the story of God's love. And you see it in the lives of so many people that I chronicle, people that I know, encounters that I had, and it's yours free. I want to give it to you. I want you to go and get it right now. I'm going to take a break. Do it right now. I'll just take you the amount of time I'm in break, then we'll come back and talk. It's relevantradio.com. Relevantradio.com. Just sign up. That's it. Just say, I want Drew's book. Boom. And they'll send it to you. They'll even pay the shipping. No strings attached. No shipping. No handling. The book is yours free. The only thing I ask in return is if you would remember me in your prayers. I'd love a chaplet. You'd say a chaplet for me. That'd be great. But if you remember me in your prayers, I'll tell you what. I would absolutely love it. But the book's yours free. Mobile app, relevantradio.com. Go there right now. When we come back, I'd love to talk to you a little bit about mercy and how you, maybe tell me how you found it, what's meant for you, and maybe your own encounters with suffering. Love to hear about it. I'll be right back. Call in at 888-914-9149. Stay with me.
This is the Drew Mariani Show. Listen in to the Chaplet of Divine Mercy.
I wanted to call and report a miraculous recovery.
Where we're here for you.
Weeks and weeks with no improvement.
Every afternoon at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific.
Now he's home.
On Relevant Radio.
We're back on our feet again, and now everyone is praying together. Hi, this is Father Rocky with our 23rd Lenten lesson on the Mass. The gifts having been prepared, the priest invites everyone to pray. Pray, brethren, that my sacrifice and yours may be acceptable to God, the Almighty Father. Standing up, the people reply, May the Lord accept the sacrifice at your hands for the praise and glory of his name, for our good and the good of all his holy church. My sacrifice and yours. Just what does that mean? Many things, but especially that the Mass is a sacrifice, not just a meal, and it is the re-presentation of Christ's sacrifice on the cross, but in an unbloody manner. Everyone who participates in the Mass is asked to make a sacrifice because making a sacrifice is a proof of love, and our religion demands that we love God.
Mass with Father Rocky, noon central.
And join us for Class After Mass. Hi, I'm Cale Clark. It's The Faith Explained, 12:30 Central every day on Relevant Radio.
It's truth, hope, and a look at life you won't get anywhere else. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, we'll pray the chaplet coming up in about 10 minutes, and you are welcome to join me anytime. I know I get a lot of email, and I want you to know I read all the emails that come in. I kind of do it at night. I go home, I'll dinner, maybe I'll take a walk with my wife, or I'll walk the dog. And you know, a little bit later, I open the laptop, and I'm already looking at the next day, when we're going to reunite and have a chance to talk to you, and I'll often check out the email. I can't always respond. You can understand that. I get a high volume of email, and if I just started to respond, occasionally I do, but if I responded to every email, I wouldn't sleep. You know what I mean? But I do read it, and know that you're prayed for. I mean, that's the most important thing. Know that you are deeply prayed for, and you are very close to my own heart. So, and I need your prayers. Pray for me. But I promise you my prayers, and you can always email me, drew@relevantradio.com, or you can email me with your answered prayers there as well. When you get those Thanksgiving, those answered prayers, and we get many of them every week, and I'm grateful for those. I love those more than anything. I love to see how God is working miracles in your life. Just put Thanksgiving or answered prayer in the byline and then send it off to me, okay? And it's drew@relevantradio.com. And as I said, we'll pray in about 9 or 10 minutes for the miracle, the answer prayer, the intractable problem that you're facing, and we'll ask God to work in your life. But I was sharing a little bit, and I'd love to hear from you too. If you want to join me, let me open the phones. I only have about 5, 6, 7 minutes for you, but I'd love to hear how mercy has helped you, or I'd love to also hear, you know, how you've come to really find value in suffering when most people run from it. You know, as I was saying a little bit a few moments ago, suffering is a mystery, but it's also a mystery, I think, how through prayer, which we're about to do, God breaks those bondages. You know, when you invoke him with faith, and Christ said this, right? Faith the size of a mustard seed, you can move a mountain, you can tell a tree to replant itself. I mean, you think about the things the Lord said. Faustina talked about trust. Those two things go hand in hand. When you pray with faith, you break the coils that encircle the person at prayer. I really believe, you know, you dry the tears from that person's eyes. You stop what might otherwise be a precipitous descent. I mean, prayer helps you really discover the loving face of God. That's what John Paul II said, and I love it. One of my favorite quotes by him. Prayer helps you to discover the loving face of God. John Paul said, look, he never abandons his people. He never does. But guarantees that notwithstanding trials, because you're going to have them, I have them, you have suffering, I have suffering. What he promises is this, that you'll not only discover the face of God, that God will never abandon you, but all that will end in good triumphs. I don't know how it's going to end. You look at that current situation, how's God going to ever bring good out of this situation? Impossible. I don't believe it. Trust me. Romans 8:28 says as much. John Paul II, who saw much suffering, saw how God can bring good out of every situation. God is always there when you let him close, when you bring him in, when you encounter those roaring seas in your life. So come on, let's face it. We all have crises in our lives, right? If you could see with God's eyes, if you knew the full truth, You might see that, in fact, everyone faces equal tragedy, just in different ways. I mean, many sufferings are not visible. I think some of those are the most difficult. But we all go through it. You're not alone. And try as you might, you know, you're never going to reach a perfect state where everything goes your way. That's temporary. We live in a fallen world, right? Eternity waits us. Maybe things go good for a day, two, a week. Maybe you had a good run. There's always a trial. I'm well aware of that. I think about how much God has blessed me. So often I'm thinking, man, my life has been blessed. Am I immune from suffering, hardship, trial? Absolutely not. We're all called to endure. We're all called to trust. You are called to die in the physical, but you got to consider that you are created to live forever. In the spirit, your soul goes on forever. That's a long time. So I don't think any preparation, any trial, obstacle, suffering you're facing right now is too tough for that. And when you look at that with that perspective, I think it transforms the situation. You know, if you were God, you would also want people prepared. You know, you would. So just a final thought on this. I mean, tempest will arrive in your life. And if a number of circumstances are in place, I think it may look like a perfect storm, you know. But I'll tell you what, God can bring you safely through that. I've seen it. I've been there, and I can testify to it. And there are circumstances that break into the turbulence of your life. You know, there are people God sends. There are angels God sends. There are blessings that God sends. You know, the world might seem like it's crashing down on you right now. Maybe the Lord's speaking to you personally. Maybe it's one thing after the other. Maybe it's the way somebody in your life is handling the situation. Maybe the way you handle the situation is really what counts. Crucial here is taking these situations one at a time, one day at a time. Remember to let the crisis pass without overreacting. See, like fear, your overreaction grants power to evil. It's good always to remember that there is a better day that will follow. With faith, it always does. You know, and if you have a blank account of prayer, you know, if you've sought that closeness with God, I'm telling you what, it's going to soften the blow. Because God will afford that type of protection. You know, the Lord, you know, and that's why I think divine mercy is so important. Just to circle back to that quickly here. I mean, the Lord said the world will have no peace. The world will have no peace. And it's not just the world. You'll have no peace. Same thing. Until we turn with trust to his mercy. I place my family in the rays of his merciful heart. You know, mercy is the balm. It is the ointment. It is the remedy for all the ills of the world. It is the balm, the ointment, the remedy for the ills that threaten and challenge you today. It is. And we're going to pray in about 4 minutes here. Okay. You and I will get together and we'll beseech heaven. But I want, and this might be new to you. I mean, you might have only found my show, you know, today. You might have only found it a week ago. You might have only been listening a short time. You may not know anything about divine mercy. I wrote a book, and I just want to put this back on your radar. I want you to have it, and I mean that passionately. I want you to have it. I want you to have it today. I want you to be one of the first to get this book, okay? And it will help you understand how important trust is. I wrote a whole chapter on what Faustina said, on how important it is when we're facing these type of difficulties, these moments. Her own spiritual director went through it. Faustina went through it. I mean, so many people encountered moments where situations seemed impossible. I shared the story of a man who was in one of the most notorious concentration camps during World War II, the Pavlovsk prison. He was getting ready to be sent off to Auschwitz. And how God prevailed in the last moment, how God brought good out of the torture and suffering and the horror of that situation. If I was living in that time, I'd say impossible. But with a vision of retrospect, knowing what Scripture says, we know that God can bring good out of situations. That's your message for today, and I hope you'll take that to heart. There's a brighter day coming for you tomorrow. I'm convinced of it. There is. So don't give up, okay? And right now, while you can, go and get my book, all right? It won't cost you a penny. There's no strings attached. Nobody's going to be harassing you. Nobody's trying to sell you anything. In fact, we will pay the shipping and handling. The only thing you have to do is go to relevantradio.com, okay, and just say, I want the book. You'll see my book, beautiful cover, on the website. We put it up there for you. click on the information that you got to put in. Just give us your address and we'll send it to you. Okay, that's all you have to do. And then go to your parish priest and say, Father, they're giving away this book free. Why don't you put an ad in the bulletin and have people go to relevantradio.com and Relevant will send it to the entire community. And it's a great resource for the Feast of Mercy, which is coming up after Easter. And there are certain things the Lord told St. Faustine on that day. If all of it told the Lord, that's the day I want to go home. You know, there's tremendous graces. But there's certain things the Lord said we have to do to tap into those graces on that day. I write about that. I give you the history behind what was said and why the Lord, this is something he's wanted over and over again. It's all in this book. There's so much. There's a treasury of information regarding divine mercy. You'll learn about this great devotion, and it will transform your life as it has transformed mine. And then hopefully you can communicate it with your loved ones. You know, maybe somebody who's away from faith. Say, hey, do me a favor. Read this book. I think you'll appreciate it. All right. RelevantRadio.com. Simple, free, no strings attached, or the mobile app. Either way, you can go ahead and get it. And I'm grateful. The only thing I ask is for your prayer. Please pray for me. All right. Pray for the mission God has set before me. That's all I ask. As you get this book, say a prayer. All right. But right now, let's pray together. If you want to get in, a couple lines are open. I know they'll fill up instantly. But 888-914-9149. We'll pray the chaplain right after this.